listening to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and many great local sponsors like St. Vincent de Paul, Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, and the Axley Law Firm. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Brother, we have got one thing piling up on top of each other. Let me play first clip. This is from ABC talking about Donald Trump being just like any father helping his son at win the soapbox derby.
Tonight, wow. An admission from the White House. President Trump himself helped craft his son's first statement about that infamous Trump Tower meeting with the Russians, a statement that ultimately proved to be misleading. Don Jr. initially claimed that he and the Russian lawyer primarily discussed a program about the adoption of Russian children and that it was not a campaign issue. But the story did not hold up. Days later, emails revealed Don Jr. agreed to meet the Russians because he had been promised dirt on Hillary Clinton by the Russian government. The president's legal team went on the offensive, saying he had nothing to do with Don Jr.'s original statement.
The president did not draft the response. I do want to be clear that the president was not involved in the drafting of the statement and did not issue the statement. It came from Donald Trump Jr. The statement that was released on Saturday was released by Donald Trump Jr., and I'm sure in consultation with his lawyers. The president wasn't involved.
Today, we learned that's not true. Sources tell ABC News the president, in fact, crafted his son's statement himself, dictating it from Air Force One on the way back from the G20 summit in Germany. According to the Washington Post, President Trump blatantly ignored some in his circle who wanted that initial response to be truthful, more forthcoming. Today, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders admitted the president was indeed involved.
The president weighed in as any father would based on the limited information that he had. He certainly didn't dictate, but, you know, he, like I said, he weighed in, offered suggestion like any father would do.
Like any father. Like a godfather, possibly, but not any normal father.
Look, there's two things that are really important here. What you have there is confirmation from Sarah Sanders, and from the Trump White House, that Donald Trump participated in a conspiracy to obstruct justice.
Is that the type of thing a grand jury might look at?
Grand jury organized by Robert Mueller?
Yes.
I just want to say, you know, yes, you're absolutely right. A grand jury could look at that, but you're taking a lot of time there. That is a fully impeachable offense. I want to emphasize, if you read down what Nixon decided to quit the White House because he didn't want to face coming out of the Peter Rodino's House Judiciary Committee, you're going to find exactly this sort of stuff. And I really want to emphasize it because I'm sort of sick and tired of lazy and irresponsible Democrats who say, well, let's just see how this thing plays out and let's, you know, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is, if you're not screaming for impeachment at this point, and I'm not saying that you get there. I know Ryan will block it. I know all the other stuff. But you understand, you're not doing that because you don't want to.
Well, let me ask you as a legal matter. When a response is drafted that goes out to the media and goes out to the American public, is Donald Trump legally culpable for telling the American public something that isn't true?
Well, legally, not necessarily, right? I mean, that depends. It's not the lie, okay? It's the conspiracy to avoid prosecution, to avoid investigation, mm-hmm. to avoid accountability.
Right. Okay.
So the conspiracy is the issue, not, I mean, I hate to tell you this line. I know it's going to shock you. I hope you're sitting, and you're getting older now, so I can let you in on this. It's relatively accepted that politicians lie. So let me offer you the second component of why this is a big deal, and I think this will be lost on a lot of people. He dictated that message on the way back from the G20 summit. Of all the things that an American president participates in, especially a new American president, you're setting the tone for our relations with the most powerful economic, and usually in most cases with these countries, military forces in the world. That's very, very serious stuff. You go to those meetings to set the tone for the United States, also to gather information, to consult about it, to be focused on, you know, at least for those few days, on our place in the world. It's a big deal. We have mounting evidence that Donald Trump, not only, you know, the first time he went over to Europe and he was insulting people and saying stupid things and stuff like that, at least it appeared that he was paying attention. There's a tremendous amount of evidence, Sly, that the guy was so wrapped up in his own personal problems, and remember, the troubles of his kid are his personal problems, that he wasn't focusing on the basics of being president of the United States. And we ought not lose sight of that, because at some point, Sly, at some point, when we're in a mess, and every expert on foreign policy keeps saying, you know, we haven't really been tested yet, but at some point it's going to happen. It happens to every president. Where we're in a real mess, the fact that Donald Trump did not form the necessary relationships, did not pay attention, did not, you know, put effort into these summits, and there was writing out memos to try and keep his kid out of trouble. That's going to come back and haunt us. And I know people like to obsess on the obstruction of justice, and I do too, and all the legal stuff. But there's a certain duty right to the presidency that he is not living up to.
All right, let's go back to lies. He's not just drawing himself and killing his own credibility. Bill Clinton sometimes had a knack of drawing people into his web, and then they ended up with a reputation that was rotten, and he kept going, right?
Ruining other people.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So here's a little montage.
Did the president fire Director Comey to impede the Russian investigation?
That's not what this was about.
In fact, when I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story.
I have talked to General Flynn. None of that came up. The subject matter of sanctions or the actions taken by the Obama administration did not come up in the conversation.
The president was very concerned that General Flynn had misled the vice president and others.
I guess it was the biggest electoral college win since Ronald Reagan.
In fact, President Obama got 365 and 2.
Well, I'm talking about
the president. Obama 332, yeah. And George H.W. Bush 426 when he won as president. So why should Americans trust?
Well, no, I was told, I was given that information. I don't know. I was just given. We had a very, very big margin.
All the contact by the Trump campaign and associates was with the American people.
As you can see from the emails, the pretext of the meeting was, hey, we have information. And there was, you know, some small talk. I don't even remember what it was. It just was sort of nonsensical.
That's really
Whoa.
Bad.
Yeah, that's really bad. And I think you're right about this thing of drawing people in. I think we can start to make a list of people who've been ruined by their association with Donald Trump. But that ruined is an interesting game, because they'll still have jobs. You know, you can always go on Fox, right? But people who credibility really has taken a profound hit. And, you know, you start with Spicer, Priebus, Scaramucci. His credibility didn't take a hit, but he didn't come out well.
You leave my man,
it looked like.
You leave my man Mooch alone.
Yeah, well, he may have been, it may all have been a scheme. But then we get into the serious ones. John Kelly, General Kelly, man with a really quite stellar reputation, who had retired. He's been drawn into things now with Trump. He's said things and done things. They're just embarrassing. I mean, and really do paint him in a horrible, horrible way.
Yeah, you'd think he'd learn from Rumsfeld. Just stay retired.
Yeah, well, right. Exactly. And then I think also McMaster, General McMaster. This is a very...
Oh, you're forgetting the big one.
Oh.
Mike Pence.
No, I'm not at all. That's ridiculous. Trump has been drawn into Pence's embarrassment.
Oh. Now, that's not very nice.
That's the reverse order. I'm sorry. There's no way. There's no way that, you know, Mike Pence is lowered in any way by his association with Trump.
Wow.
You can't go below where Mike Pence was.
You mentioned Fox a second ago. This is the other story that's brewing out there, and this one is a doozy.
Tonight, a new lawsuit with a bombshell accusation. The White House worked with Fox News to spread a false story about a Democratic staffer who was murdered, Seth Rich. He worked for the Democratic National Committee. Rich was killed in Washington last year, his unsolved death sparking a right-wing conspiracy theory that it was Rich who leaked tens of thousands of DNC emails to WikiLeaks, not the Russians. And some claim he was murdered because of it. In May, Fox reported they had proof the conspiracy theory about Seth Rich giving emails to WikiLeaks was real.
If this is true, and Seth Rich gave WikiLeaks these DNC emails, this blows the whole Russia collusion narrative completely out of the water.
But it was not true, and Seth Rich's parents were outraged. Amid mounting pressure, Fox retracted the story. The Fox News story was largely based on quotes from Rod Wheeler, a former homicide detective investigating the case. But now Wheeler is suing Fox, claiming his quotes were fabricated. He says he got involved after being contacted by a well-connected Republican donor and Trump supporter. The investigator says they went to the White House in April to discuss the Seth Rich story Fox News was working on with then-press secretary Sean Spicer.
He really listened. He didn't say a whole lot. He said that if I wanted to, he could put me in touch with the White House general counsel.
Not long after, Spicer denied any knowledge of the Fox News Seth Rich story.
I'm not aware of, I don't get updates on DNC, former DNC staffers. I'm not aware of that.
But today, Spicer admitted he did have that meeting at the White House with that investigator and donor, calling the donor a, quote, longtime supporter of the president's agenda. And the investigator now claims there was more from the White House. 2 days before Fox aired the story, the investigator claims the donor left him this voicemail saying the White House was on board with the story.
I got a note that we have the full attention of the White House on this. And tomorrow, let's close this deal.
Then this follow-up text about the Fox News article before it was even published, quote, not to add any more pressure, but the president just read the article. He wants the article out immediately. Today, that donor, the man in the middle, telling ABC News he's never even spoken to the president before.
I didn't speak to anybody at the White House. I was being sloppy with my words.
And late today, the White House was pressed about that story that later outraged Seth Rich's own family.
The president had no knowledge of the story, and it's completely untrue that here the White House involvement in the story.
You know, we're going to find out the truth about that, don't you?
That's really, I always enjoy being on with you because I like you. But also, you occasionally cause my jaw to drop. And I think you nailed it there, man. We have to pause because there's only one thing in that whole report. I mean, Spicer's gone, and some of these other people are expendable politically.
And he's not going on Dancing with the Stars. There's just a little
bit of that. But okay. The fact that that line about the president read this and wants it out immediately. Wow.
So when you mentioned, conspiracy earlier in this conversation, boy, this sure ducktails nicely with that, doesn't it?
Well, you see, and that's the key. When we talk about crime, the powerful, the elite, they usually have somebody else who does a lot of the bad stuff, right? And they know how to avoid, a lot of things. And so where they get caught, and this is with, people in politics, people in business, people in, nefarious activities, is in the conspiracy. It's why we have, RICO laws and all sorts of other structural vehicles by which we can hold these folks to account. And with Trump, it's really interesting because I suspect that it's going to probably become almost a daily basis. We're going to see new evidence of conspiracy, new elements of wrongdoing. And again, I will strongly emphasize that it is true that a grand jury can go at this and can look at this and, you know, you can have all the legal constructs and arguments there. But a president of the United States doesn't just operate on the standard that you didn't catch me or I haven't been convicted yet. The founders of this republic established a radically different standard from that. It was a political standard, and that standard was that if you engage in what is clearly seen by the reasonable person as wrongdoing, you can be removed from office. You don't go to jail. You don't have to pay a fine. You literally, all that happens is that you are removed from your position because someone like you shouldn't be in that position. And what I'm saying is that despite the incredible caution of the Democrats and the, you know, complete irresponsibility of most Republicans on this, Donald Trump has met the standard that the founders intended.
Stand by. We'll talk more with John Nichols next. Right here at SlysOffice.com.
Take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us. Okay, so it's been an amazing week, and right when you think it's calming down, we go right back to an incredible story. Now, some say this story was overhyped, but I think, in fact, indeed, it was not overhyped. Let me play this. This would be from last night. I think this is it right here.
Tonight, a sign the Russia investigation has entered an entirely new phase. The Wall Street Journal reports special counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury. The Journal reports the grand jury has been secretly working for weeks as Mueller investigates whether President Trump or any of his associates colluded with the Kremlin. The president's personal lawyer insists there's still no indication the president himself is a target.
With respect to the impaneling of the grand jury, we have no reason to believe that the president's under investigation here.
The news comes amid growing questions about the Trump Tower meeting organized by Donald Trump Jr. with a Russian lawyer who he was told had dirt on Hillary Clinton from the Russian government. This week, we learned the president himself dictated Don Jr.'s initial response to that story, a misleading statement that said the meeting was primarily about Russian adoption. The president has denounced the entire Russia investigation as a witch hunt, acknowledging it was on his mind when he fired FBI Director James Comey.
When I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story.
But today, the White House says they are, quote, fully committed to cooperating with the special counsel. The president has told me he is even willing to testify under oath.
So if Robert Mueller wanted to speak with you about that,
I would be glad to tell him exactly what I just told you, Jim.
But the president has also been trying to discredit Mueller.
I can say that the people that have been hired are all Hillary Clinton supporters. Some of them worked for Hillary Clinton. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous, if you want to know the truth from that standpoint.
And now in another sign Mueller's probe is expanding, the special counsel recently hired Greg Andres, a former top Justice Department official and expert on fraud and foreign bribery cases.
So let's get to John.
All right. So is that a good sign?
Whoa, no. you know, Sly, it's almost like you're putting together a disappointing Friday report here. You know, I mean, just better end of the week report. That's really, 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 really a bad sign. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that Trump has always gotten by on bravado, right? Of course, I'll sit down with that prosecutor. Of course, I'll talk to that committee.
Of course, I'll release my taxes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The reality is, and this is a big deal, when he was in New York, there was a lot of stuff happening, and he was in the middle of it, despite what he might have thought. He was not in the middle of it. He was, you know, a peripheral figure. And so he got in a little bit of trouble. He'd make some bold statement, and 2 days later, the tabloids were onto something else. As President of the United States, when he says these things, he speaks as the leader of the free world, supposedly, what used to be called the free world, however we define it. But he speaks as an incredibly powerful, incredibly influential man who people do pay attention to. And I would just suggest that he's going to have a harder and harder time finding lawyers. It's just as simple as that. Because the lawyers who would represent him are going to look at what he said and what he's done, and they're going to say, this isn't doable. You've put yourself into positions that are unsustainable. And, of course, you can always find some lawyer to pay him enough or, you know, if they're ideological enough. But the lawyer, I give you a good example. When Clinton got in trouble, Bill Clinton got in trouble back in 97, 98, he and the people around him had really, really, really good lawyers.
Bob Bennett.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else, too. Clinton himself was a lawyer. He understood some of this. And as much bravado as he occasionally showed, he also spoke cautiously at a number of times, in a number of moments.
Here is Richard Blumenthal, the senior senator from Connecticut.
I've seen grand juries often develop their own questions and want to know about financial transactions. They are composed of ordinary citizens who often have very good questions. And the other reason I think this grand jury is going to be important to the special counsel is that we are dealing here with a potential indictment of the highest ranking official in the United States of America. So Bob Mueller is going to want to know how the average citizen reacts to this evidence. It's going to be a very good sign for him of what a jury, a regular jury at trial, might react to. We're a bit ahead of ourselves. There's no conclusive proof of any crime here. But very importantly, that grand jury can ask its own questions. So for the president or any part of his staff to say they're going to draw lines is completely inappropriate.
Succinctly, I want you just to clarify, when you say we're dealing with the potential of an indictment of the highest ranking official in the U.S., you mean you believe it is a possibility that for an indictment of the president of the United States?
It is certainly a possibility. There's a lot of authority that there cannot be an indictment of the president. When I say authority, there's no real legal case law,
right?
But there are pretty good legal arguments against it. Still, if he is out of office, there could be an indictment, and there could be indictments of lower level officials and members of his family.
So what do you think about that?
Well, you notice that Blumenthal is a former state attorney general, I believe.
And a former federal prosecutor.
Knows his way around law pretty well. He got a little cautious there, right? And on the, when he said, well, a sitting president, and then he started talking about the family and stuff like that. And, we're going into new territory here. And this is a really, really complicated issue. This is one that has to be examined from a lot of perspectives. But I will return to two points that we've made in the past. Number one point, the president of the United States is not subject to everything, because he can pardon some people, especially whether he can pardon himself. That he seems to think he can. I don't have to think he can. But even if you start to get into this game now of trying to avoid accountability, trying to protect your family members and your aides, your closest aides, from legal accountability in this circumstance, the one thing the Constitution clearly says is you can't pardon yourself out of impeachment, right? And I don't want to sound like a, you know, kind of a repeating meme here and keep saying, going back to the same thing. But I really do want to raise impeachment up to a higher level of discourse. We keep focusing on, you know, these questions of, could the president be indicted? Could the president, you know, and people around him be indicted? Might he abuse the pardon in this setting? You know, then we get into a constitutional crisis.
That might have been appropriate to bring it up in that context because of the grand jury, right? And of course, if you notice, it is interesting that there already had been a grand jury set up in Virginia for some of Michael Flynn's decisions. This one is set up for the district attorney. And by the way, Sean Hannity's very mad about that because the District of Columbia is so liberal. But it is interesting that this grand jury has been summoned in the District of Columbia.
Well, I mean, look, I happen to think people in the District of Columbia, when instructed about the rule of law, get the point. Just as I would hope people Mississippi.
My point is that Mueller must be looking at obstruction of justice here.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think there's any question of that. I think people, wherever you're at, though, you constitute a grand jury. It's carefully done. And you find people that are willing to ask the right questions, follow the rules. I always dislike that sort of venue shopping game that, you know, politicians play, saying, oh, this, I don't like this district or I don't like that state. But what I will say is this. Did you ever see Richard Nixon led down the, you know, in handcuffs, led out of the White House? Did you ever, you know, see him led into court?
No, just Jim Baker. Help? Just Jim Baker, the televangelist.
Well, but this is an important thing. Because grand juries can be constituted. Special prosecutors can be in play. Investigations can draw information forward. At a certain point, no matter what a president does to try and protect himself, no matter how he lies, cheats, and steals, whatever, any president, the one thing that we, as we the people, have is an absolute protection against a lawless presidency is the impeachment power.
All right, let me get to Laurie. I'm going to move you along here because I got one more thing to play here, and I think this is something the Democrats need to focus in like a laser. Obviously, it's not every day that a president's transcripts and conversations with foreign leaders are released. There's a portion of this that's very significant.
Tonight, classified documents reveal the true nature of President Trump's phone calls with world leaders in the days after his swearing in. The Washington Post published leaked transcripts of two contentious conversations. The first with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto, all about that wall.
And who's going to pay for the wall? That wall will go up so fast, your head will spin.
Don't worry, we're building the wall. Don't worry.
But on the phone, the Mexican president is firm, calling the idea that Mexico will pay for the wall completely unacceptable. President Trump responds, "The fact is we are both in a little bit of a political bind because I have to have Mexico pay for the wall. I have to. I have been talking about it for a 2-year period." He tells Peña Nieto the funding will work out in the formula somehow, adding it will come out in the wash and that is okay. In fact, the president was already publicly laying the groundwork for the U.S. to pick up the initial tab.
Are you going to direct U.S. funds to pay for this wall? Will American taxpayers pay for the wall?
We're going to be starting those negotiations relatively soon, and we will be in a form reimbursed by Mexico, which I've always said.
So they'll pay us back?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
The wall was President Trump's signature campaign promise, but in that phone call, he tells his Mexican counterpart, this is the least important thing that we are talking about. But politically, this might be the most important.
Right there. Right there, John.
Yep.
Right there. The Democrats need to be hammering that home in places like Youngstown, Ohio, anywhere for that matter.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
Yeah.
This guy, and very simple message. This guy looks you straight in the face and lied to you. As simple as that. I mean, the guy lied to you, and he lied for a reason. The reason is that he wanted people who are desperate and scared about the future because of technological changes, digital change, automation, things like that, to A, blame other working class people, right? Blame immigrants, blame, you know, newcomers to the United States. That's number one. He wanted that to happen because he wanted that division. And number two, he wanted them to think there was a solution to that fantasy, i.e. the wall. Now, what I thought that was fascinating in that call is it sort of revealed Trump's desperation.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's scared because, you know, I don't know if you saw the new Quinnipiac poll.
I did.
33%. Uh-huh. Now, generally in politics, the line is go below 35. You know, you're starting to shed your base, right? That people who supported you and were strongly for you are starting to flee. Down, you know, Trump got 46% for president in November of 2016. Majority of people voted against him. Clear plurality of people voted for his opponent, not him. But he was still at 46%. When you're getting down in the 33, 34% range, you're not just talking about people who don't like you but voted for you because they don't like the other person more. You're talking about people who liked you who are starting to go against you.
All right, real quick, I've got one
more. Trump, that's real bad.
One more clip to play. Obviously, the governor of West Virginia switching parties was nothing more than a formality last night, but it made some news. But the fact that Trump went to Huntington is an interesting thing. That's right on the border of Kentucky and, frankly, Ohio. It's just a couple miles up the road. Strategically, it's a great place to go if you're campaigning to be president of the United States. Of course, Donald Trump already is president of the United States.
Yeah, he's still campaigning, though. Yeah.
Here is Donald Trump last night in Huntington, West Virginia.
The reason why Democrats only talk about the totally made-up Russia story is because they have no message, no agenda, and no vision. The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is.
Boy, he took the world off Walter Mondale and George McGovern and Alf Landon's shoulders.
Yeah, not Barry Goldwater. There's quite a few people that Dukakis is looking like a superstar. Remember, Donald Trump thinks anything he's involved in is the greatest thing that ever happened. So he almost have to give him a little bit of slack there because he's delusional. But that is a big deal because, as we just recounted, most people didn't vote for him. 54% of people didn't vote for him. Only 46% did. And I always like to remind folks, he ran weaker for president of the United States than did Mitt Romney.
When
Mitt Romney lost, the Republicans felt they were in crisis.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to Sly's Office, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.